Hey everyone, welcome back for another episode. We are your internet historians, and in today's episode, we will be discussing the history behind the movie Bombshell. The provocative real story of three whip-smart, ambitious, strong women who anchored one of America's most powerful news networks, becoming headlines themselves when they risked everything to stand up to the man who made them famous. So what'd you guys think?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I liked it too. It was entertaining.
Yeah. And then... Well, it's like, because is it bad that I didn't know any of this happened?
Oh, really?
Yeah, I didn't.
Think so.
I mean,
considering it had to do with Fox, and I'm just like.
Yeah, I don't really watch or keep up with Fox News. I think Megan, I've always been like, meh, about like really my biggest thing I know about Megan is when she made that comment, or she asked Jane Fonda about her plastic surgery, and Jane was like, bitch, really?
That was on her show, her network show after, though.
Honestly. Yeah, I know.
Oh.
Yeah, I knew she was on, like, a news, I knew she was on, like, Fox, and then she got her own program, and she asked Jane that later. But I saw that, and I was like, well, I really don't want to look more into Megan.
I just remember hearing about the Roger Ailes, like, scandal, but I didn't, like, you know, care to delve deeper into it. I just heard about it and I was just like, oh, yep, that sounds like something that would happen over there.
You're like, not surprised.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, okay, yeah, that sounds like something that's probably accurate.
I feel like really bad that I didn't know because you know, I was in Becca, right? It was all around about news and broadcasting.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Oopsie.
But this came out in 2016, so we already graduated, right?
Yeah, and yeah, I was true. In LA at the time, so I was looking at Kardashian stuff. I was at the Kylie Jenner beauty school, overlining lips 101.
Oh my god. One thing that I thought was interesting, the idea that there are people who are like Democratic or liberals that work within the Fox News network that just like work there because they need a job or whatever. And yeah, I didn't like finding like concrete evidence when I was doing my research, but that there has been like rumors that this is like a true thing, which I mean, makes sense because people are trying to, you know, work in news. And so they're just going to take whatever job they can get. But yeah. I was like,
I wouldn't find that surprising at all because like I said, like my college group of people are all like newsy people. And like, even I work on our campus news reporting show. I'm sure you guys heard about it.
Wasn't I on it? Oh, no, I was just pretending.
No, that was another one. That was another.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dang it. I thought I was famous for a second there.
So anyways, that one, they had like literally it was like talent. We had talent and they would come up with their own segments and talk about it. And then I never wanted to be talent. So I was always in the back, like either helping like set camera up, mic them up, I don't know, do whatever, all that stuff. And so the people who are talent are very ambitious. And you would see like, even after college, they like would go off to the most random places in America, because that's how you start in like a small town in Kentucky and kind of like move your way around. And you see that with these, almost every reporter or anchor, you see that they've just kind of hopped around until they finally get on somewhere. And so anyways, I can totally see like somebody working at a station where they might not agree with what the station is putting out there, but they just need it for their resume. And the other thing about this kind of industry is about the people you know. So, you know, if you are working with this person, that anchor maybe or producer goes off to another station, they might like call you up if they have a job opening and you can go over there and follow them. It's all about who you know. So it just kind of sucks that you can't just go where you want to go. You kind of have to go where the opportunity is.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I like this movie.
Oh my God. But for the only thing was, is that it was so freaky seeing like Megyn Kelly's face and then hearing Charlize Theron's voice. Am I saying her name right? Charlize Theron,
honestly.
Yeah.
But like, you know, because
they did a lot of prosthetics on peeps, but it looked good. It looked
I kept forgetting that was Nicole Kidman too. I was like, that does not look like, I had to like look it up. I was like, I know who this is, but it's like, is that really her?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think Nicole still kind of resembled herself a little bit, whereas like Charlize, I felt like, did not look like herself at all. And it was just like freaked me out.
They like taped her eyes or something, right? They had to.
Yeah.
Her nose. I think it was her nose. Oh,
yeah. It felt like the eyes and like maybe it was a combination of both of those. Yeah. But I was just like.
There's a video online of it.
Yeah, I was like, it kind of looked freaky. Like, I don't know.
It was freaky. And I felt bad because I think Megyn Kelly's like husband kind of criticized Charlize's like performance, but even Megan said he was kind of being like too critical because he was like, oh, she didn't capture, you know, your humor and stuff like that. But then I was like, I felt like she couldn't really move her face that much.
She's talented and it was a good performance, but he felt like her voice was a little forced to sound.
Oh, there was
like
that, definitely.
Megan.
Yeah.
I was like, how can you show humor in a movie about sexual harassment though?
I just think like he said her character was like too like just one dimensional, like versus
stoic,
whereas
I think a part of it, because Megyn Kelly didn't have any type of role in the movie, like she didn't have any input right on like how like she didn't help Megyn Kelly.
She didn't help at all.
Yeah. I think it's kind of just based off of what has seen of her or whatever.
I think that Charlize did do a good job. It just like kind of, it was just so freaky because you're like, your brain is like, I see one thing, but I hear something else. And you know what I mean? It's like, what is going on? Yeah. You're tricking me. I know you are. So, but other than that.
Fun fact real quick. This movie has the same screenwriter as The Big Short.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
I forgot. She's
like that bathtub scene, really?
Because he also did The Blind Side, right? Is that what you said? Is that what we said?
No, the author of the book was the same as The Blind Side.
Okay.
But not the screenwriter for the movie. Oh, okay. Yeah. But after I read that, I'm like, yeah, I can see the similarities definitely between the two movies.
Yeah, because they also had that moment where she would break the fourth wall. Remember when she was kind of like walking and she was like, we haven't seen a rat in 4 months. So
I can see the similarities. And it's very, the entertainment values, I feel like, is very similar. It's just like it kept me engaged and it felt like it went by really quick too.
I know. Yeah, because that was my thing. I was like, because I saw this as like a recommended movie for me to watch for probably a year now. And I've been like, meh, I don't know. So watching it, I'm like, oh, okay, that wasn't too bad. Because didn't I say The Big Short? That was hard for me to swallow. Yeah. Because I felt really dumb the whole time. I was like, what's going on?
I mean, it was still entertaining though.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, I feel like this movie, I mean, it took me a bit to watch. I mean, I watched it the year that it came out, but I feel like I was kind of put off at first because I thought that it would be really sad and depressing. And then while it does have its sad moments, I think overall it's a pretty good movie and it doesn't bring it down
like,
too much.
Yeah, like even though it is about like something, I guess, a serious topic, I feel like it more has a role of like people, like the women coming, like being like, okay, we're taking back the power kind of a thing. Yeah, so I feel like it's more I don't know if inspirational, but yeah, it's like kind of more like
uplifting,
let's mother effort back instead of being kind of sad.
There's one scene I wanted to talk about, but I don't know if we should talk about it now or afterwards. So should I ask you guys now?
What scene?
It's the scene where Megan goes to confront Kayla and she was like, why didn't you say something? Like, did you think about the rest of us? Like, did you think of what you not saying something? Because there was that, like, I watched Megan do like an interview and they brought that scene up and they were like, because that scene obviously didn't happen. And they said that Megan said that she would never react like that either. And they kind of didn't like how it was scripted because they even said, oh, that was written by a man. I was
Well, there is some, that's what I was going to say too. There was another article. I mean, I guess we'll just stop talking about the scene now. There was an article that I saw that was saying basically how Megyn Kelly kind of used all of this to her like advantage almost. And I was like, I didn't check to see, but I was kind of like, I don't know how I feel about this article because it was saying that like, yeah, this stuff happened to her, but she also used it as a way to
like a stepping stone or something.
Yeah, I guess to like there was something else happening within I guess Fox where she was kind of
because she wanted to leave maybe like
I forget I didn't really read the article because I wasn't really sure how I felt about it.
I didn't read it. I'm like, what is it, this?
Well, it was just like, I don't know, because I was going to read it and then it kind of started saying something. I was like, I don't know how I feel about that, about them saying like, oh, she was using this to her advantage when it was like she was the one who was being sexually harassed. So I was like, I didn't really take the time to read it fully, but that just kind of reminded me of that, how like I don't know, twisting, I guess, not twisting, but it's like taking, what is it, like liberties with someone else's like narrative, I guess, mm-hmm, you can say. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just reminded me of that.
Well, yeah, I was just kind of curious on your opinion on that, because I think that scene was kind of hard to watch because,
yeah,
you know, I think it was showing how Megan was kind of trying to be like, hey, I'm trying to have this girl moment with you. And the girl kind of accused her in a sense. And then she kind of fought back. And I don't know, like, I think it's I feel like I see
where they were trying to go with it. I think it was kind of more of a thing like, oh, like, I think a general message to like women in general, not necessarily in that moment, like between those two characters, but be like, you should always speak up in order to like help a future victim, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
I guess
that's what, I felt like it should have gone a different way. Like,
yeah,
the Megan should have been like, how would I know it would have turned out like this? You know, I didn't. And, you know, she did say in the interview, she was like, I do think about that. I do wonder if like I spoke up then, would things be different? But
I had that whole little section that if you want, yeah, because I thought it was really interesting. I had it. So yeah, that's from an insider article in 2020. It was a whole thing where Megan and some people that were a part of it, they all had a viewing party together. And then I think she released it on like her YouTube or something.
Yeah,
like
that's
that.
Where
like,
I watched it. Yeah.
Yeah. Her reaction and like her feelings. So yeah, she said, yeah, that she had wished she had done more, spoken up sooner. She said, quote, it's funny because I look at the Me Too movement and at no point in my view did victim number 17 blame harassment on victims 1 through 16. She said, that's not the way this movement has shaken out. She continued in the video saying, Doug asked me, would you take that scene out of the movie if you could? And I said no, because the truth is that I've looked back on my own life every moment from that moment forward, and I do wish I had done more, Kelly said. What if I'd thrown myself in the fire back then? Maybe that wouldn't have happened to you. So yeah,
I was just gonna
think about it.
But, yeah, I was gonna say maybe that scene was also trying to be something like more like an internal monologue, but like played out between two characters instead. Like maybe, I don't know.
That
is a good point.
Yeah, like maybe they're just like, oh, this is like more, yeah, an internal thing in her within herself, and then we're just putting it into characters, so that way it's like an outward monologue. Mm-hmm. So maybe that could also be.
I do disagree with one person blaming the other one for not speaking up. I don't think that's right. I think in certain cases, maybe you should, like, if you were like attacked, you know, in a very brutal way, and then the police found that your attacker, like, in that's a moment where you can speak up and say, yeah, that was the person who attacked me. And if you didn't, you know, that could lead to something else. Whereas this, I think in Megan's situation, because Roger stopped harassing her, like, I can see in her head being like, oh, you know, maybe he stopped with me, you know, and nothing happened. So maybe that was just me.
I don't think anyone should put a time frame or limit on when someone should report something, or, you know, like, that person is ready. And so maybe, yeah, she just wasn't ready or didn't, you know, whatever. There's a lot of variables to something like that.
Right.
And it's always just kind of difficult with harassment and sexual harassment, because it's the whole thing. I mean, it's the basis of the Me Too movement. It's, you know, you could come forward and say something, but are you going to be believed? And unfortunately, it's, you know, takes how many people, 23 people that came out against him. And it took that many for people to be like, well, if it happened to 23 women, maybe there is something here. And it's just like, as opposed to, you know, violent crime, where it's just like, yeah, there's evidence. Yeah, we have it on video, you know, all that type of stuff. I mean, well, you could have this on video too, but crimes like that, where it's just like, it's public, you know, people are around, public knowledge type of things, like, oh, we're very much going to believe this person. But it's like, unfortunately, with like this type of violence, it's just, she probably felt like, you know, who's going to believe me type of a thing. I might as well just be quiet. And
And I mean, also, I think it's even discussed kind of in the film, like the whole power dynamics. He's like the person in charge of the whole Fox News, basically. And it's just like, you know, like you said, people aren't going to believe you. They're going to wanna, and he had a lot of loyal people with him, so it's like hard to go up against a person like that when you feel like you're the only, like, you're only one person. But then when it comes out later that you have, you know, all these women, then you feel more empowered to be like, yeah, actually this did happen to me too, kind of a thing. And yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of, I mean, I'm sure we'll talk about, you know, his defenders, but it's just like, it's kind of like those people, it's like, well, I didn't see it. Oh, it didn't happen to me. So it didn't happen to anybody type of a thing. And it's just like, not how that works.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I just wanted to bring that up because I just felt like that scene stuck out to me a lot. And yeah, I did have an issue with her kind of doing that blaming in this, you know. So anyways, I'll start. So I'll give I'm gonna just go through the backstory of our key players here. So first of all is Gretchen. So Gretchen was born at Nanoka, Minnesota. She was a prodigy violinist who performed on radio, television, and even studied at Juilliard School of Music in NYC. In 1988, wow. She was crowned Miss Minnesota. In 1989, she was crowned Miss America, and she was the first classical.
What? Really?
It's good she's doing all this.
Yeah, I'm like, dang, she's Miss America.
She said it in the movie.
Yeah, I think it was mentioned.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't hear that. Dang, I'm impressed.
And she even said it, like she even talked about her playing violin in the movie too. Okay, because there were a couple moments where like I definitely heard that part where she was said something about her fingers and how, I don't know, maybe like the calluses maybe she got or something like that. And she was like, yeah, it reminds me when I play the violin. I was like, okay, did she really play the violin or are they just like putting that in? So that's why it stuck out to me. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So yes, she was Miss Minnesota. Then she was Miss America in 1989. And so with that win, she obviously, that opened her up to many opportunities. So she met with President Reagan and made many television appearances. One of them was her playing a newscaster on Bloopers and Practical Jokes with Ed McMahon, ooh, I'm sorry, and Dick Clark. After that, she was hit up by Hella Television Agents. That was how I wrote it. It was basically launched, and that basically launched her career in broadcast TV. She then traveled around and worked as an anchor with smaller television stations. So like I said, it's kind of like, I'm trying to think of a good small television station, which to me, I think of as like KTVU, but then I don't think that's small because that's in LA. But it's just kind of like, you know, that small town television station and like,
yeah,
you know, somewhere. And then she finally got a gig with CBS and being a co-anchor of the Saturday edition of The Early Show. She did report on some big moments like the Oklahoma City bombing, OJ Simpson murder case, Tim McVeigh execution, and the September 11th terrorist attacks. She first appeared on Fox and Friends as a weekend substitute host in 2006, and then she later became a full-time host for 8 years. And then, I mean, I think pretty much it's all accurate. Then, you know, she got her own show and the movie explains the rest. So, Megan. So Megan's upbringing was not as interesting as Gretchen. She was not Miss America. She was not a prodigy violinist. Sorry, Megan. But she it does not, yeah, it does not mean she was she's not interesting. Galatians, sorry. Just thought of Kourtney Kardashian for some reason. Anyways, Megan was born in Champaign, Illinois. She earned her undergrad in political science and then her JD from Allegheny Law School in 1995. She was an associate at the Chicago office of law firm Beckel and Brewer. And so from her Wikipedia page, she was a lawyer for 10 years. And I think she like says that all the time. Cause I think she said it in that interview we're talking about when they asked her like if they would keep that scene with Margot Robbie asking, like, you know, did you think, you know, the where she reacted to the movie. I don't know why I think I went like that, but she reacted to the movie because I think she said like I was already a lawyer for 10 years because she said you know, if she did say something then and lost her job and didn't work in TV anymore, it would have been fine because she was already practicing law for 10 years, so she could have just went back to being a lawyer. And I think in the movie she said it a couple of times as well. So yeah, guys, she was a lawyer at one point.
You didn't know. Now you do.
Yeah. So then in 2003, she moved to DC and was hired by the ABC affiliate WJLA-TV. Like, see, one of those stations, those are like the small stations I'm talking about.
It's just a bunch of letters.
Yeah, it is. Like they say it in Wikipedia, and to me, it's like when you go to the eye doctor and they're like, now read the letters. You know, that's what it looks like. So she was a general assignment reporter. She covered national and local news. CNN president Jonathan Klein later said he regretted not hiring Megan as a reporter at the beginning of her career, as she was the one talent you'd like to have from somewhere else. But I don't really understand what that means.
Yeah, it was like the general thing I've ever heard.
I know. Like, I wrote it down and I read it a couple times and I was like, and I was like, even saying it again, like for the 15th time, I'm still like, what? But overall, he regrets not hiring her. In 2004, she got a job at Fox News. She contributed legal segments and later hosted her own legal segment. She climbed her way up and occasionally contributed as an anchor, but more often as a substitute anchor on the weekends. On February 1st, 2010, Megan began hosting her own two-hour afternoon show, America Alive, and the viewership increased by 20%. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It's so random to me, though, that she went from being a lawyer to an anchor. You know, I find that like,
yeah.
And let me say
she
why
likes to talk.
She does. Yeah. But to me, the reason why I find it strange is because I don't know about you guys, but for me, when I get in front of a camera, I like freeze. I like forget everything I was about to say. My brain goes dead. And that's why I find it hard to believe like it, or swallow that she was a lawyer and then she became a news reporter, because you know, for someone like me who also talks a lot, it's like I get on the camera and I'm like and on top of that, being a news reporter is really, really difficult because you have to be very clear. It's a lot of inflection, enunciation to have that. I mean, she's a white blonde lady, so you know, her English and you know, just maybe being able to enunciate all these words and speak in a way where an audience can easily understand you, that might just come easy for her from her background. But that for me, sometimes I have a hard time with that, because when I get really nervous, I start talking even faster and then nobody understands me. So so that's another thing that I know how hard it is to be a news reporter. So that's why I'm like, dang, you went from one hard thing to another hard thing. That's like crazy. But she didn't have to take a test for this one. That's actually, you know, that bar, the bar, guys.
Yeah, the bar.
The bar. All right, let's move on to Kayla. So Kayla isn't, like we said, she isn't a real person. She was based off of many different people, that many of the women that, what am I trying to say? Victims. That Roger sexually harassed. Yes, the victims. I was like, what is the word? So when I first saw her, I thought she was playing Tommy Lauren. But
yeah, I thought so too.
Yeah.
So she reminds me of.
Yeah. I think so. Honestly, I think they wanted to base some of Tommy into her. Like she said, she was this millennial, right? She's blonde, she's pretty, she's ambitious. And so I think they wanted to take that from Tommy and put it into Margot, or maybe Margot was inspired by Tommy. Who knows? It's good to also see her character because we're also millennials. And I think it kind of helps us relate to her and see that like this stuff is still happening. Because I think for me, at least, I heard about this all the time. So when I was in college and we had to do internships and we would have to report to our teacher, like literally all the teachers brought up sexual harassment. And I was like, what? Like, does that still happen? And it does. So it's like a little bit of a reality check for me. All right. Roger. So Roger was born in Warren, Ohio. His parents did divorce, but I didn't see much detail about them moving out while he was at school. His father was abusive. I did see that, but I just didn't think the whole like him being paranoid was that important. He had your typical broadcasting career. So this is like the career that like everybody thought they would have when they first get into broadcasting television. And I say this because this is literally like how they taught it to me at school. You're first a PA, which is a production assistant. You're like the little bitch of the production. Then you're the producer. And then you're the executive producer. And then you make connections. And who's his connection? Richard Nixon. He became his executive producer and helped with his presidential campaign. And then he worked with Ronald Reagan with his reelection. Then he wrote a book. And then he became the president of CNBC. And then he was hired by Rupert Murdoch in 1996 to become the CEO of Fox News. So I know that's like very, very short, but I feel like that is the stages. Like, you know what I'm trying to say? Like when you start a career, you literally think that's how it's going to go. It's like you first start here, then you go there, then you go here, then you go there, then you go here. And then you're at the top.
Yeah.
And if you're a white man, that's how it goes. Mm.
Sort of. I thought you were going to say if you're a white man, then you sexually harass them and then fall down. I was like, oh my God.
So let's go into the scandal that Gretchen, her accusations and stuff. In 2016, Gretchen Carlson filed a sexual harassment lawsuit against Roger Ailes. As in the film, she filed the suit after she was terminated from working at Fox News. Her suit was filed by the law firm Smith Mullen of Montclair, New Jersey, when it names Mr. Ailes as the sole defendant. Again, like in the film, she didn't like sue Fox News. She went after him.
Because she couldn't technically when she was brought on to Fox.
Her lead lawyer, Nancy Erica Smith, said in an interview that Ms. Carlson's grievance was with Mr. Ailes personally, not the Fox network. Carlson was indeed gearing up for this lawsuit before her termination, but once she was terminated, it obviously pushed them to go ahead and file it right away. And I think this is probably just because, like, as in the film, we also discover later on that she was, like, recording all these conversations. So I think she was kind of just, like, getting a lot of evidence in order to file this lawsuit against him. Here is like a kind of bullet point format of all the accusations that were kind of laid out in her lawsuit. So Ailes would ask Carlson to turn around while in his office so he could view her from behind. He also regularly commented on Carlson's appearance, particularly her legs, and would urge Carlson to wear certain outfits that he thought enhanced Carlson's figure. He told Carlson she was sexy, but too much hard work, and told her, "I'm sure you can do sweet nothings when you want to." Ailes wondered aloud how anyone could be married to Carlson and said that marriage was boring, hard, and not much fun. Ailes told Carlson that if he could choose one person to be stranded with on a desert island, he would choose her. Ailes told other people in Carlson's presence that he had slept with three winners of the Miss America pageant, but not Carlson. Because like you said, she won the Miss America pageant in 1989. On a separate occasion, as Carlson walked over to greet him, Ailes said that he remained seated when women approached him, so they had to bend over to speak to him. Ailes asked Carlson how she felt about him and then said, "Do you understand what I'm saying to you?" When Carlson met with Ailes in 2015 over concerns of her treatment at the company, Ailes told her, "I think you and I should have had a sexual relationship a long time ago, and then you'd be good and better and I'd be good and better. Sometimes problems are easier to solve that way." Mm-hmm. At the same meeting, he told her that he could make anything happen for her if she listened and understood what he was saying. And then also, I just wanted to mention that the suit also details, I guess, some accusations she made against her Fox and Friends co-host Steve Doocy or whatever his name is. And yeah, so, but even though he's not like the one that she's going after, she also just kind of put that in there, I guess, to kind of show that there were these things happening to him and that she did speak about, but that no one did anything about. And then, yeah, so for her compensation, what she was, it just said that she was seeking like monetary compensation for the damages to her career and reputation. But in the end, she was awarded $20 million.
Mm-hmm.
For everything. So where are they now? So Gretchen Carlson, in 2017, she wrote a book titled Be Fierce, Stop Harassment, and Take Your Power Back, which speaks on her experience coming forward with her allegations. She also had a special on Lifetime titled Gretchen Carlson, Breaking My Silence, where she travels and kind of investigates stories of sexual harassment. I guess she also worked with Congress members to introduce the Ending Forced Arbitration of Sexual Harassment Act, which is a mouthful, which sought to end the practice of cases of sexual harassment at companies being dealt with behind closed doors. So that way they had to, you know, do everything in public. And so it allowed employees to take their cases to court instead of just being settled within the walls of that company. There's also a report that I guess the House passed the Forced Arbitration and Justice Repeal Act or FAIR Act, which encompasses the issue Carlson supported, but is more far-reaching. And I guess because of the NDA, she can't really go into detail about what really happened to her. That's why she also had no kind of part in the movie Bombshell, because, you know, she couldn't say anything. But I guess she was asked kind of like, oh, when you worked at Fox, did like what you were reporting on, did that align with what your true ideals are? And she obviously couldn't really say, but she says that she no longer watches Fox Network. So I don't know if that really says anything. I don't know. Cause when I was reading this, I was like, I don't really care about like whatever, not like about her, but I mean like about what she's doing. And I'm like, cause of again, where she worked and like her ideals. Cause I'm like, just that doesn't make her a good person still. But then that's, I was like, I don't know. Well, I don't really know if I believe that. So Megyn Kelly in 2017, she was the host Megyn Kelly Today Show that was on NBC. but she left that show about a year later because I guess they had an open on-air discussion about wearing blackface as a Halloween costume, and I guess she received a lot of backlash about that. So then shortly after that incident happened on her show, she parted ways with the show, and I guess she has launched a new media company that has a podcast that she is the host of, and it's called The Megyn Kelly Show. So she has that, and I guess it's like pretty popular. It's like number one on whatever podcasting thing, probably for conservative people or something, I don't know.
Yeah, that blackface thing, that was probably the first time I'd ever heard about Megyn Kelly.
Really?
Just because of that scandal, yeah.
I didn't even know that happened, because I heard about her show, but I didn't obviously watch it because I didn't care about her. but I didn't even know that happened until I was reading this.
Yeah, because like, wasn't the gist of it was that she was like half defending blackface if it came from a place of, not inspiration, but like from a good place and not a mocking place or something like that. So she's kind of defending blackface.
I'm not sure, but I could only assume that, yeah, it was because she was defending the use of it. And that's why it got a lot of backlash, which makes sense. And I'm like, okay, why would some of the things
she later apologized, but it's just like,
that's what I'm saying. Some of the things these people like think are okay to say or talk, I'm just like, why?
Yeah.
And it's like, also like, even the fact that she had to come back and apologize, like, couldn't you discuss this? I'm sure there's people that are producers and stuff on your show, like, how come people don't, like, I don't know, like, do they not?
I mean, realistically, it would have made more sense if they would have come. I mean, and maybe they did and I don't know, but I believe her apology was like a written apology, but what would have made more sense is if she came back and then had a discussion with, I don't know, black people and brought them on and been like, educate me. That's how that works.
I don't know.
But whatever, Megan.
Yeah, so anyway, she's doing her own thing now. And so for Roger Ailes, he's dead.
Yay!
I was like, I don't know how to say this, but he is no longer alive.
That took me so long to like figure out, because I kept looking him up. I'm like, oh, he's 77. Okay, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. What's going on? And I was like, how come it stops after, like, I was like, how come it doesn't say what he's doing right now? What's going on? And I kept looking.
And he's also pretty old too in the film. And at that time he was already pretty old, but I guess,
thinks that his wife did it.
Really?
She pushed him.
Yeah, because I mean, her and I watched this movie the other night because she hadn't seen it at all, and she's like, how much is he worth, where's he at now? And I'm like, well, he's dead, and blah, blah, blah. She's like, the wife did it. Oh, millionaire.
I know, because when I saw that he was on there, I was like, oh, what are they up to now? I was like, isn't he dead? And then I'd like look to confirm, and I was like, oh yeah, he's dead. Anyway, on May 10th 2017, Ailes fell ill.
No, he fell.
Yeah, he fell. So the wife did do it. Oh my God.
Yeah, pushed him.
So he fell and hit his head at his Palm Beach, Florida home. He died on May 18th, three days after his 77th birthday. The Palm Beach County Medical Examiner attributed his death to subdural hematoma, aggravated by hemophilia, which is, I guess, his disease that he had, where I guess it has something with the blood clots or that or
he
the other.
A lot.
Yeah, and so I was just like, bam. This basically happened right after all this shit happened.
I know.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I mean, some of it was still ongoing, technically.
Yeah.
And he died.
Yeah.
Wow. I guess you're literally about to talk about this, Alec, but I just can't believe his wife stood by him.
I mean, and she was the third wife, too, because I was just like, who the heck would marry this guy?
Yeah.
And then I was, like, looking into it, and they were talking about Rudy Giuliani and how Rudy Giuliani officiated his third wedding. And I was just like, where are the other women? I guess they got out while they could. Anywho, but yeah, let's talk about who supported him. So I got this from Time Magazine and the New York Times, but yeah, they kind of sort of show this in the movie, but I guess in real life it was kind of more intense, that she had contacted, oh, and get this, so she was an anchor, I believe, she's like one of the really attractive anchors that where they had that whole scene in the dressing room where they were putting on all the dresses and stuff like that. Kimberly Guilfoyle, I believe I say her last name.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah, she was one of the anchors, and also she is with Donald Trump Jr.
Oh, still, yeah.
Still with him. And it's just like, seems about right. Anywho, so Beth Ailes, Roger Ailes' wife, contacted Kimberly a Fox News co-host to help marshal support at the network for the Fox News head, according to Vanity Fair. In the movie, Guilfoyle is portrayed distributing pro-Ailes t-shirts, demanding that women around the office put them on. And then get this, she reportedly left Fox herself in 2018 after allegations of sexual misconduct, which she subsequently denied, were made against her. So,
wow.
What an environment at Fox. I don't know. I think she stepped away or something like that. Other women at Fox spoke out on Ailes' behalf, including Greta Von Sistern, and Janine Pirro, who both hosted their own shows on the network. In the movie, we see Pirro confront Kelly at the snack machine, though this is likely fictionalized. Megyn Kelly, meanwhile, remains suspiciously silent, as depicted in the movie. Beth Ailes also reached out to Kelly, but Kelly claimed she could not speak out about the situation until the investigation was over. And then there's also a like brief moment where they throw it to the journalist Geraldo Rivera, and he's just kind of like, I don't know what to do. And then I think later he does say something. But yeah, so they were initially skeptical of Gretchen's claims, but Geraldo Rivera apologized in a Facebook post post for casting doubt on her claims, saying he was, quote, filled with regret. And then also, as I had mentioned, Greta Van Sistern, the TV anchor, she also defended him, and she later published a post to Facebook expressing her own regrets, quote, I read Geraldo's Facebook post in which he said he regretted not believing Gretchen Carlson's claim of sexual harassment. We all regret it. She also assigned blame to Mr. Ailes' superiors at Fox News and its parent, 21st Century Fox, writing, quote, I regret that Roger Ailes was not supervised by those in a public corporation who had the duty to supervise him. Mr. Rivera, who said on Twitter at the time, I stand with Roger Ailes, and then Greta at the time said that Carlson's claims didn't ring a bit of truth to her. And then also, not surprising, Sean Hannity dismissed the claims as, quote, BS. Some of them reversed their positions, but seems largely the male anchor's.
Yeah, and they probably only reversed their opinions because it's probably backlash or whatever the hell, you know, like against them, and like only for their own probably freaking image.
Yeah, but I did find it very interesting that Greta said that thing, that it should have been the higher ups that were supervising Roger to do something about it. It's just like, that's not how that works.
No,
he's like, CEO. First of all, there's hardly anybody above him. What are you talking about?
She's talking about Rupert.
I guess. And it's just like, he's doing other stuff. Like,
Well, so at my company, it's like the CEO reports to the board of directors, but it's exactly the same. Like, they're not there all the time, you know, watching him. And what they kind of supervise is like the numbers, right? So they'll see when they have their meetings, they'll see all the numbers and what's the future plan and, you know, how are we going to fix this and blah, blah, blah. At least, I don't know, that's what it sounds like. It goes on in there. And yeah, they're not going, how's your behavior? Have you been treating your employees well? So that doesn't make any sense. And what was I going to say? Oh, did you guys see that Barbara Walters and him were friends? Yeah.
I mean, no, but I don't doubt it because TV.
Well,
not saying anything to Barbara's character, but it's just like, it's kind of like the Harvey Weinstein thing. It's just like, if you had no experience with it personally, there was nothing stopping you from being an associate with that person. Yeah. So.
Well, I was just like, Barbs, what did you have to say about all this?
Barbs.
Well, I'm just saying.
Well, I know that is. I wonder if she, because I mean, I try to think that too. Like, what if someone I knew, like it came out, something like that, I'd be like.
Yeah, and especially if it's like widely known that you guys are close friends, you know, it'd be like, So we already talked about Gretchen. She got 20 mil. You go, girl. But honestly, it doesn't compare to how much Roger got. Okay, so he got.
That's crazy to me.
So how much did he get? Because I thought he got 40 million, but the movie said he got 50 million, and then Wikipedia said that he got 65 million. I mean, regardless, he got hella. Like way more.
It's in the millions.
Yeah, way more. And I mean, part of it. Okay. One thing I can't like, you know, talk, you know, we can't really do anything about is that they, you know, he was under a contract. So we don't know what the contract says. So, you know, and I'm sure when they signed that contract, they didn't think this was going to come up. So that could be a huge part of why he got so much. But at the end of the day, you know, I don't know. It's, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know how those things go. So I watched that one interview that I keep referring back to because it's like the only one I want. So it says that Fox spent around $45 million in settlement payouts. And at the end of the day, that's not a lot of money. Like those victims should get a lot more because some of them lost their jobs. Like, so in the movie, you know, that girl that Jennifer Morrison played, you know, when Megan goes to another station, it's that girl. So she said that she got fired and she lost her house. And she didn't say how much she got, but another girl said she got $100,000. I'm like, $100,000? So if she got, if the other, you know, if they got around the same, that's really not worth it. And
so wait, so the girl said she lost her job at the job place that we saw on?
No. She lost her job at Fox.
Okay.
She was there.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
She was harassed by Bill O'Reilly. Oh my God. In the interview, she was saying how like Bill would call her while he was jerking off. Yeah. And one time he called her and she was at her mom's house and she literally put him on speakerphone and her and her mom listened to him. Yeah. Mm. I'd be like, are you getting, I'd be like, mom, go get your freaking phone and record this shit. This is nasty.
That's so disgusting.
Yeah, that is really disgusting. But like I said, she was one of these people who lost her job, lost her house. And that really sucks and also kind of lost her career. And that was like a big factor that, we'll talk about that later. I need to focus on what I need to talk about. So like I said, like it sucks because they didn't really, I don't think they're fairly compensated, but each victim has their own opinion because the other girl, Ruby, the one where they were like referring back to her case because the guy asked to see her hotel room.
Yeah.
So she said she's okay with it because Roger, his reputation is gone. You know, the other male anchors who were also were fired or whatever, their reputation is gone. And she's okay with that. She's okay with the fact that people finally know she can live with that. So like I said, each victim has their own opinion. Money wise, I think it's just not cool. All right. So I'm going to read from CNN. What has changed at Fox? So let's see. Okay. So the rot at Fox started at the top. Ooh, I like how that sounds. The rot at Fox started at the top. With Roger, but it didn't end there. In the months that followed, other men accused of sexual misconduct were also sent packing, including 8 p.m. star Bill O'Reilly. That name. It's such a catchy name. Poor Bill. He just screwed his own name up. Anyways, most everyone stayed in house ills built while management tried to clean up his mess. The fallout kept Fox's lawyers busy for years and cost the company tens of millions of dollars in settlements. The Murdochs and the management team made some tangible changes, new human resource leadership, a workplace council to address sexual harassment, a new procedure for sexual harassment complaints, a 24/7 hotline, a makeover for the New York newsroom and replaces AL's old bunker of an office. Several lawsuits alleged that a sexualized climate languished long after Ailes has left. So it says, the culture has not changed, says attorney Lisa Bloom in 2019 when she filed a lawsuit on behalf of commentator Britt Henry alleging misconduct and retaliation. They gave a lip service to the idea that they have improved, but they have not. This is my fifth client I'm representing against Fox News. Nothing has changed. Ooh, which I'm not surprised about because to be fair, this isn't something where you can just like do night and day, you know? And if you do want to do it night and day, you're going to have to do a serious makeover. That's going to cost you a lot more money. And I feel like Fox is like, well, and I think so much.
Also, just the type of people that work there and their ideals.
Yeah.
And the thing, I don't know, just that in of itself to me just speaks to why this is also happening. Not that it can't happen in other places that are opposite of them, because I'm sure 100% that it does. But I don't know. It was just like we said before, it's just not surprising that these this type of stuff is happening at this type of facility.
Well, it's true, because Megan was even saying how she went to another network. I think it was like MSNBC. I can't remember. And she said it's the same thing. And I can see every, not every, I feel like I'm, okay. It makes me think about like tech companies, because like, all right. So when you say like, I work at a tech company, like everyone's like, oh my God, is it Google? Is it Facebook? Is it like, you know, Instagram? What is it? Pinterest? Oh my God. And then when you say no, and then people are like, why don't you want to work at one of those? And you're like, cause it's like not that cool. Cause it's like most of them, they have like very similar cultures. Like, yeah, they provide all this free stuff. You know how tech companies do. They try to make it look cool and stuff, but because they're so big and ginormous, you're basically like a number to them, because there's so many
in the machine.
Yes. I know. I was going to say like, it's a factory. Like you're just in and out. You're just in to do the job. And a lot of people like working at smaller startup companies, cause it's just a lot more family. Like, you know, it's just kind of more comforting. It's people care about each other. That's how I see it with these networks, you know, probably being around the same, like they're all the same. And sorry, I was like, I can't imagine one being better and handling their culture and their company versus the other. Sorry, I feel like that's really, I feel really bad saying that. But
I mean, I think it's just reality. I think that happens on everywhere. Like, that's why all companies have like, you know, their division that handles stuff like that. Like,
I was just like trying to figure out if like this scandal specifically like led to other scandals and like, or not other scandals, but like other networks and like heads of networks, you know, falling from grace. I feel like we always say that. But you know, being held accountable, I guess, is the better, but it kind of morphed.
When did that Harvey thing happen?
Just about to say that.
Oh, okay.
So really all I could find is that, you know, this scandal at Fox News is just like you said, it was kind of just like the catalyst of all of these scandals, because Gretchen filed her lawsuit in July of 2016, and the New York Times published their Weinstein report in October 2017, which ultimately 80 women accused Weinstein and 23 women came out against Ailes. So it's like 2016 and 2017 were kind of like the biggest years for the Me Too movement, and like that's like pretty much when everybody started, you know, Me Too, that's the movement, you know, everybody started speaking up about it. So I was like trying to see if anything, you know, else with other networks, but really all it really came down to was Harvey Weinstein, because Harvey Weinstein, like that scandal was like kind of took over. It was like the scandal of all scandals, pretty much.
Yeah. What about Bill? Didn't he also die shortly after?
No, he's in jail.
Weinstein, he is? I thought he died.
Yeah, he got COVID, I think, while he was in jail. Or maybe, I think he did or something. I remember
I thought he died. Maybe I'm just confusing the two of them.
No, he did not. I'm pretty positive he's in jail right now. Alec, are you looking it up? But I was gonna ask, yes, like, when was the alive. Bill Cosby thing?
Yeah, it was all about the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Dang.
Yeah, all of it. I feel like
I'm like, man, what else happened? Who else turned out to be a disaster?
After deliberating for 5 days, a jury convicted Weinstein on February 24th, 2020. Of 2 of 5 criminal charges, 1 count of criminal sexual assault in the first degree and 1 count of rape in the third degree. They found him not guilty regarding predatory sexual assault, which could have been a life sentence. He was sentenced to 23 years. He's serving his sentence at Wend Correctional Facility. He's still facing criminal trial in Los Angeles. Oh yeah, he did get COVID. But he didn't show any symptoms, was put in isolation, is recovering.
I remember seeing scenes of him with like a walker too. So I think that's also why I was like, I feel like they're very similar.
Oh, it says on November 19th, it was reported that he did not have COVID, but his health is declining.
Oh, there you go.
So he could be dead soon. Darn.
Dang it.
Oh, you know who else? You know who else I feel like is just like I don't hear about anymore because he was accused? Kevin Spacey.
Oh yeah. He just went into seclusion.
All the, so like I said, I was like trying to find more on this and just like more networks and stuff, but really it just kind of was just like this person and this person, and it just happens that they all, I mean, which I guess, yeah, the majority of them were like in the entertainment industry and were on TV or actors.
Well,
or
I think it's
like
just because they are bigger people, so it's more to report on at the time.
So there was like, there was some article that I was reading, and it pretty much just like went down the chain of everybody who has since been accused, a lot of television anchors, and
his name, Matt Lauer.
Oh, yeah. He was the first one on the list. I was just like, Matt.
That was cray cray.
So the other stuff that I had. So in February 2017, federal investigation into Fox News comes to light. A Justice Department investigation into Fox News is made public for the first time. And the government started looking into whether or not Fox News failed to inform shareholders about settlements made with employees who accused Ailes of sexual harassment. And then even that investigation widened further and included the United States Postal Inspection Service, which investigates mail and wire fraud. So Fox just all around got into big trouble for lots of things. Finally, on kind of sort of Lisa's part, the agreement resolves a legal complaint that the shareholder filed in Delaware on Monday. It includes a $90 million payment to 21st Century Fox from 30 third-party insurers, minus the cost of lawyer fees and other expenses. The settlement helps to recoup the large financial toll that the harassment and racial discrimination crisis has had on 21st Century Fox. The company has incurred about $50 million in costs tied to the settlement of sexual harassment and discrimination allegations involving Fox News in a one-year period that ended June 30th. So they, like I said, they got in trouble for a lot of stuff, and they just, I don't even really know how they continue to go on, because it sounds like they're just hemorrhaging money.
Well, I guess I'm doing the research. They're like one of like, I was just saying, I just think it's because they have a lot of followers. So that's why they're
Something I was reading that said they had like 2 million daily viewers or something like that. And then like what Kayla was saying about how her family was the type of family who like had the logo burned into this, into their TV, because they just kept it on all day. I'm just like, I hate it.
Yeah.
Lastly, I just had some stuff on Bill O'Reilly, because I felt like they kind of briefly like had little spurts of what was going on with Bill O'Reilly, and then they kind of were just like, and then they gave him money and let him go. So I was just like, what even is going on here? So I tried to sort it out, but it's kind of weird, because so the company, they pledged to clean up its workplace and foster a culture of trust and respect after the scandal first burst into public view in July 2016. Yet in the months that followed, allegations continued to surface at Fox News and in other divisions. And in February, the company granted Mr. O'Reilly a four-year contract extension worth $25 million a year, even though it was aware of at least six settlements involving harassment allegations against him. Which is what I like kept seeing everywhere. I'm just like, what? They renewed his contract even though all this is happening and he's got accusers, and what are you doing, Fox?
Because he brings an audience and he brings the money, so that's why they don't care.
I know. November 2016, Megyn Kelly's memoir alleges harassment by Ailes. Kelly alleges in her memoir that Ailes made unwanted sexual advances towards her. O'Reilly tells CBS This Morning that he's not interested in making my network look bad, referring to Kelly. O'Reilly adds on his own show, if somebody is paying you a wage, you owe that person or company allegiance. If you don't like what's happening in the workplace, go to human resources or leave. That's that was his feelings on it, and her book, and Kelly in general. And I'm just like, yeah, I wish it were that easy
for right
to do that.
God. Yeah.
And then
it's like, have you ever gone to human resources? Have you ever even like, no, that's not how it goes, homie.
So O'Reilly was later the subject of a New York Times investigation that revealed five women had been paid settlements from O'Reilly, Fox News, or 21st Century Fox since 2002. O'Reilly was ousted by the network in April 2017. So I kind of have a little timeline that I found from Time Magazine. So April 1st, 2017, the New York Times reports that O'Reilly and Fox News paid $13 million to settle sexual harassment claims. to a total of 5 women who worked or appeared on his show to dissuade them from pursuing litigation or speaking out publicly. That investigation included a lawsuit filed by a former producer, Andrea Macris, who was publicly settled in 2004. O'Reilly claimed no wrongdoing in the case. Their investigation included a lawsuit by former O'Reilly denied any. Yeah. So he continues to do this. Yeah, I think every single time. So then April 4th, 2017, former Fox News guest Wendy Walsh spoke out and said that she was also persuaded from pursuing legal action. And again, he denied the claims. So on April 9th in 2017, Fox News officially announces that they'll investigate O'Reilly after the guest Wendy Walsh and her lawyer Lisa Bloom publicly called in a complaint to the network's anonymous hotline. The network announced Paul Weiss will investigate the claims against O'Reilly. And then April 19, 2017, they cut ties and announced that he would be leaving the network after the investigation. O'Reilly had taken a 2-week vacation, which he said was pre-planned, on April 11th. So, you know, that had nothing to do with it. He left on his own accord type of situation. So, and I didn't really look into where he is now because honestly, I don't care. No one should ever hire him ever again or listen to anything he has to say. So yeah, that's how I feel. Yeah.
And I'm sure he's probably living life just business as usual, even though, yeah, he lost his job, but I'm sure it's not really affecting him in any other way.
I doubt. Yeah, exactly. I just feel like he's one of those guys who probably can get hired as like a consultant, you know, True. Where your name isn't on the... Yeah, mm-hmm. Or some freelancer. Anyways, but
I was telling Alec that I looked up really quickly about the leg cam thing because, you know, in the movie they kept talking about cam. Yeah. And so I looked up something.
I thought you were going to say somebody had a camera on their legs that they look up.
See, that's what skirt. I thought too. When she told me that.
I was like, who had that? Leg cam?
Well, let me explain. So basically, yeah. You know, in the film, they kept talking about how there is a camera that they basically use to showcase the women's newscasters or anchors or whatever, their legs in it to kind of, you know, because it's a visual medium, as Ailes kept saying. And so I found this article that was actually written in 2013, so 3 years before the allegations against Ailes even came out. And so this article says David Flick, don't know that name, the NPR media correspondent and author of Murdoch's World, recently revealed a little notice feature of Fox News's afternoon opinion panel, The Five. It's called The Leg Cam, and it's exactly what it sounds like. Speaking on November 11th to an audience member in Los Angeles who asked about the network's portrayal of its female talent, the book touring author, who is well-sourced with the network, responded, there's a camera that they have and what they do. I'm told this is absolutely true. They sort the women they have by the degree of attractiveness, and particularly the degree of attractiveness of the legs. I believe it's the seat on the front right where, having arranged this hierarchy, they put the woman with the best legs there, and they have a camera that goes directly for the legs. And so essentially they have what they call the leg cam, and that is to accentuate the sleekness and design of that particular person on air. And then in this article, they have a couple of like GIFs or GIFs, depending on how you pronounce it, of clips of basically the women who are seated in this seat, and how like the camera kind of like pans out or whatever, pans in into the scene or whatever. And yeah, basically the woman who's deemed the most attractive or has the most attractive legs is seated in that first kind of spot, and it's always a woman that's seated right there. So yeah, it's true, they have it.
It's also creepy.
Yeah,
it's super gross.
It's like, we don't have the mustache cam. You know, God. Who has the best mustache?
I mean, say, are you really like really attracted to mustaches?
That's what I'm saying. I was just different thing there.
I was just thinking of the most like, what does a guy have that we could like
biceps? Came.
Yeah,
it just came. That was like bulge cam or something.
Oh God, no.
Anyway,
I'm glad people are getting in trouble for it, and I hope it continues to go that way, and people come forward when things like this happen, and hopefully it won't take this long and take this many people to have to come forward.
Yeah, and especially with like the whole Bill O'Reilly thing, I believe you're talking about how he was accused multiple times, but then I think once everything kind of got more attention, like other people within the same field were kind of being held accountable, that's when they were like, okay, actually now we have to like make sure that you are also fired because of all these previous things and the current one. So it's like, I don't know, it's just like, I feel like to me, it seems like they're kind of only taking these steps because there's an eye on them. And it's like the public and everyone else is kind of being like, you have to do something about it. So that's why they're starting to do something about it. Because otherwise, I feel like because these people are bringing them in so much money, they wouldn't normally do that, because it's like these people have like a fan base and everything. And that's why people tune in to their network to watch them. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't really have
well,
I'm not very hopeful.
To me, it's the fact that like you need some sort of evidence. And I think people, you know, try to be cautious of how they handle these things. So it's like what I'm thankful for is that Gretchen actually did her research, her homework. She made sure she like did whatever she could to win her lawsuit. Whereas like other people, they may not have those types of resources, or even who knows where they are financially. Because I think most lawsuits, they don't just take a day, you know, they take years, and who knows how you can fund that and what they're, whoever is going to be. Yeah. So that's like the biggest thing. Cause I think the hardest part about stuff like this is you have to have some sort of like evidence, and a lot of people don't just take what you say, which sucks, but it goes in, you know, the companies are always going to try to protect themselves too. So that's why mm-hmm. they need that. Yeah. It just sucks. People just need to get better.
Mm-hmm. Do better.
Yeah.
Don't do it in the first place. How about that? That's my advice.
And if you are the owner of the company and you find out someone within your company is doing something or is being accused, do something about it right away instead of waiting mm-hmm. until there's.
Yeah, don't try to cover it up. Don't try to pay out all these people until it accumulates into $90 million.
Exactly. And then pay out the people that are doing it. Come on. Thanks for joining us this week on The Internet Historians. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and give us a rating. We would also love to connect with you, so give us a follow on Instagram and also subscribe to us on YouTube. Next week, we will be discussing Frank Abagnale Jr. from the movie Catch Me If You Can. So don't forget to tune in. Thanks again, and we will see you next week.
Bye! Bye.